You are listening to Circle of Hope's Sunday Meeting Podcast. This talk was given at 2214 South Broad Street. For more information, check out circleofhope.net or join us in person on Sunday evenings at 5 and 7 p.m.
This journey that we've been on through Lent, these 40 days leading up to Easter, it's almost over. Thank God. This is the turning point. And we were singing about Jesus' story this week, kind of from the perspective of being in that crowd, people waving palms, because we're trying to get into this story with Jesus all throughout Lent, but especially this week. And tonight is kind of the turning point when Jesus is coming out so that we can see him for who he is. And he's sort of, you know, if you think about a lot of his ministry, he kind of goes in and out of hiding because he knows if he really comes out into the light, the powers that be are going to get him, kind of like anybody who tries to do good. They will be opposed. But Jesus is kind of throwing caution to the wind now, and he's going to come out and suffer what may come for us to see who he really is. This moment of coming out kind of reminds me a little bit of the game of hide and seek that you probably played as a kid. I grew up in the country, in the mountains, and we would play like long, big games of capture the flag and hide and seek. And I like that there's this moment at the end when some parent is like shutting it down or something, picking kids up. Somebody says, come out from wherever you are. And then the kids who like never got caught kind of triumphantly emerge from the woods, victorious over the game. Kind of reminds me of that. This moment also reminds me of like kids fighting in the schoolyard when like a teacher who really cares and kind of has influence with the kids comes out onto that scene and like gets in the middle of the conflict and breaks it up, helps the kids actually talk to each other. And so then this doesn't happen all the time, but I've seen it happen a few times when the kids who were like pummeling each other are suddenly crying and like working it out. I think Jesus is coming out as the Prince of Peace is kind of like that moment too. The king is coming. It's a victorious moment. We beat the game. Peace is possible. The conflicts that we're locked in don't have to have the last word. The light is going to shine and reveal what's in our hearts. And the love that this king is bringing is greater than all of the darkness there. And we get to choose whether we're going to go with the king or not. And I think that's kind of the edginess of Palm Sunday that we're going to talk about too. Perfect example, though, is in the story of the blind man in John 9 that we've been following throughout Lent. I love the way the story ends, so we're going to look at that first. So let's finish this story, because it's a real, Jesus is coming out in this moment, too. This guy who hasn't seen Jesus, I think, with his eyes up until this moment, gets to see Jesus for who he is, even spiritually speaking, because Jesus, you know, put mud on this guy's eyes and told him to go wash in the pool. And one of our pastors was saying that maybe the Christian life is all happens between that moment of meeting Jesus and on the way to go get washed. I kind of feel that, but I also like how this story ends, where this guy gets to actually see Jesus for who he is, because it's even better. When we meet him today, he just got thrown out of the temple. The guy who got healed, he's getting blamed for his healing, which I think actually happens a lot. People don't understand it. And so he's thrown out of like the center of religious life, which is like a big deal. It's pretty, it would be pretty isolating to get thrown out of the temple if you were a Jewish person. And so Jesus finds him. And that first verse might be my new favorite verse in the Bible. When Jesus heard that they threw him out, he found him. I think that's Jesus, able to find us in our isolation and rejection. And when Jesus found him, he asked him, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" And that's often a term that Jesus used to refer to himself, especially when he was talking about his mission. And of course, the core of his mission is this death and rising that we're about to see. And the man asks, "Who is he? Tell me so that I may believe him." And that's what makes me think that Jesus, that this guy hadn't seen Jesus before. He'd heard his voice and felt his touch, but he didn't actually know what he looked like. And Jesus said, "You're talking to him. I'm that guy." And then he said, "Lord, I believe." And he worshiped him. And then comes the edginess of Palm Sunday. Jesus said, "For judgment, I have come into this world so that the blind will see, and those who see will become blind." Kind of a hard saying, kind of mysterious. And we're going to get more into the heart of it later. But I think that Jesus' coming out gives people a real choice, or it makes us aware of the choice that we always have all throughout the year. Are we going to go with Jesus or not? And he explains more about what he is talking about in this interaction with the self-righteous leaders who were religious leaders who were lurking around, as they often were, because they say, "We're not blind too, are we?" You know, they're always worried about judgment. And Jesus said to them, "If you were blind, you would not be guilty of sin. But since you say, 'We see,' your sin remains." I think this is a tough one, this line that Jesus seems to be drawing. But I think he's indicating that those who think that they've got it all together, you know, those who think that they've got their program, they've got their answers all locked down, airtight, you know, they've got their priorities and they've got their habits, and they're really not open to God shaking it up. The law and control is more important to them. Their hearts are shut down. Maybe their sin is self-reliance. And what Jesus is looking for is an openness to God, a humble heart that is willing to receive him and to move with him. For some reason, when Jesus talks to the Pharisees, I always think of Friar Thomas Keating's three emotional programs for happiness that he identified, unconscious motivations of our inner landscapes that I think really drive our actions until we can kind of bring them into the light and let Jesus heal us. These programs are hidden so deep in our makeup that we often don't see how they drive our actions. And I think sometimes the better our actions seem to be, the more that one of these programs might be secretly driving the show. And I think that's what Jesus was trying to say to the religious leaders, that we have, you know, even our good deeds can be these heroic disguises for our false selves. Jesus invites us to be free to love and serve by the power of the Spirit instead of acting out of our programs. And that calls us, sometimes that calls us to die to the needs that actually keep us from our real life. And I think that's what Dave is trying to lead us toward here tonight. I am not anti-internet by any means. I use it every day. I have a smartphone. But this week I was noticing, man, all the ways that it gives us a lot of ways to feed these programs instead of having a real life with God and each other. Just the accessibility of these distractions. And I want to name it tonight because I wonder if we've just sort of swallowed it. And I think some of us have been thinking about it during Lent. Sex, one of the most intimate ways that people relate, is so subsumed by the pornography industry. And so now a gift of our humanity that's meant to be connective is used in these divisive and destructive ways, isolating the users in this loneliness and shame, and, as you probably know, enslaving the workers to this really diminished version of themselves. I was also amazed by Twitter wars between people this week, just how easy it is to attack other people on there and say things that we might never say to somebody in person. I think it probably sounds old-fashioned now, but like when I let my kids have cell phones, the first thing I said to them was, never text somebody something that you would not say to them in person. Because we need to keep relating to each other in person, because it allows for our full humanity to be seen. God comes to us in a body as a person. so we can appreciate this about ourselves and each other. I think we need to be valued for our whole selves, not just these compartmentalized things about us. But the good old internet allows us to divide ourselves up according to particular preferences and issues. And I really don't think it helps to build real community. So I was, you know, some of our cell meetings got canceled this week because of the snow, and I heard some people saying they were sad about that because they rely on that face-to-face meeting. I was glad. I felt that way. I was glad to hear that. I think we are actually healed by continuing to relate face-to-face with one another like we are in this meeting as human beings, in a way that we're never going to get from a screen. So when Jesus comes into Jerusalem on this day, he comes face to face with his enemies. He's coming out of hiding. He's been, like I said, he's been doing a lot of dodging before this, knowing that they'd probably get him, and they did, just as anyone who does good will be opposed. But Jesus was into the ultimate good. He was into raising the dead, and that was the real sticking point with him and a lot of the Jewish leaders. In fact, you can see the early church really struggling with this even after Jesus died and was risen. You know, Paul was often dragged before the courts for saying that the resurrection happened, you know, but just made people so mad. And the Sadducees especially did not believe in the resurrection of the body. And so when Jesus raised Lazarus just a few days before this moment where he's coming into the city, it was like the most embarrassing thing that could happen to them. And they wanted to kill Lazarus again, and they wanted to kill Jesus to prove that this was just a fluke thing, that the law is the law and not even God can break the law. So when Jesus rides into Jerusalem on this day, he's face to face with all these people who had mostly rejected him, not really knowing who he was. It's likely that they weren't even really thinking about the meaning of the word Hosanna. I don't know. We don't know. But I wonder if it was kind of like we use the word good morning as a greeting rather than not really as a proclamation, like this is a good morning. So we don't know. But I think that mostly they were enamored by Jesus's latest miracle. And they hoped for a leader who would raise them up out of their political troubles. They were really hoping for change. And I fear that it was more about what they wanted really than what Jesus wanted. They wanted saving in this tiny sense. Like they wanted safety and security, affection and esteem, power and control, you know, those things that we think that we need. And that's why they were running after him, as the Pharisees said. I love this last verse. This is getting us nowhere. They feel ineffective. Look how the whole world has gone after him. You know, the Pharisees are so worried about Jesus's influence with a couple of Judean people. But I think really that verse is really expressing John's conviction that Jesus is conquering the whole world, even in this moment, this upside down moment, not with force, but with love. And so Jesus, they want saving in this tiny sense, but Jesus wants to bring them in as partners on this mission to save the whole world. But I'm not sure they really want that or that they really love him. They're kind of caught up in the moment, it seems, caught up in their easy feelings. I watched this great documentary on Netflix called The Push about how like a group of people can be influenced to kill somebody. And I think that's part of what was happening that week, how they could go from praise to crucify him in a matter of days. So I imagine that Jesus meets their shouts of praise with tears in his eyes, feeling their lack of love, how blinded they are by the things that they think they need. And Jesus loves them anyway, with a love that's beyond a feeling, and he's about to demonstrate his love. The way that he rides into town is a pretty big statement too. I want to skip to this one. Instead of riding on a beautiful horse like royalty would, he rides in on a little colt, a donkey's colt, which as a horse lover, I've always thought this is one of like the most embarrassing and pathetic things that Jesus ever did. And I love him for it. But I think, you know, a grown man would look probably pretty ridiculous on a little animal like that. kings went to war on these big, beautiful horses to express their dominance and their power over people, their strength. And Jesus is doing the opposite thing here. He's coming in peace. He's coming in surrender to God. He's coming in obedience. You know, trusting God that his suffering is going to be worthwhile. He's coming in love. So in that case, I think the little cult was appropriate. So Jesus is coming out. And what do we see so far? I think we see one who finds us in our rejection and isolation. We see a king who has victory over the game. One who loves beyond our decision to love him back. And the one who brings peace to the fight. But there's something else here too. I wanna read the next part of the chapter in John together. We're in John 12 now. Because I think it kind of launches us into Holy Week. And I want you to hear it like straight from Jesus' mouth. This teaching that he gives here is like probably worth meditating on for the rest of your life. So let's read it together out loud. Somebody read it nice and loud for us. Thank you, John. I love the fact that the Greeks are there is a real interesting point. I think it indicates that a new future is dawning here for the world. And I think it's directly related to the presence of these Greeks that Jesus says, my hour is come, because salvation is not just for the Jews. Jesus is about to like open up the whole thing. And people who aren't Jewish are already looking for him and they're already recognizing him. And this is what he was destined for, to save the whole world, to include everybody. And the gospel is a gospel for the whole world only because of the cross. So what does the cross mean for us? I think Jesus tells us there in verse 25, even though his work is complete for us, he says, anyone who loves their life will lose it, while anyone who hates their life in this world will keep it for eternal life. That word for loses is destroys. So the person who loves their life destroys it. It kind of reminds me of like a little kid who has a little pet that they love and is like squeezing it so hard, they squeeze the life out of it. What are we hanging on to too much? I think is where Dave is trying to get us to go. What are we hanging on to more than Jesus? The good news is in verse 31 when he says, now judgment is upon the world. Now the ruler of this world would be cast out. You know, when Jesus talks about judgment, I think people automatically jump to feeling personally judged. And they think Jesus is judging people, right? I mean, I think we're just wired that way. And I think the last couple hundred years of Christian faith have maybe implied that to many people. But it's a shame, because the opposite, I think, is really true. It's the opposite of what Jesus is saying and doing. The world judged Jesus by killing him. He's saying that's about to happen. The world is going to condemn itself by its treatment of the Son of Man. That's what he's talking about. And the world is about to judge him and deem him guilty. And he's going to go with that for us. And by coming through it, he'll make a way for us to come through judgment too. Any kind of judgment that is thrown at us, we don't have to receive because of Jesus. And I think that's why we need to follow him this week. We need to see and hear the judgments that we bear about ourselves and others, not just stay defended against them or blaming others for them. I think we need to see how Jesus takes them upon himself so that we can be free, uncondemned, no matter what our hearts or others tell us. Jesus is the King, and the King is coming. I think it's a good question, because the world is rough, if you haven't noticed. There's a lot of condemnation out there that people are throwing around at each other. A lot of reasons to fear, for real. I think right after the march yesterday, somebody got shot at like Broad and Walnut or something, like in the middle of the day. It's a lot of reasons to fear and to judge. But are we going to follow the King beyond our fear and judgment? What's going to have the last word, our fear and our judgment, or Jesus?
Thanks for listening to Circle of Hope's Sunday Meeting Podcast. If you want to talk about it or get connected to a cell, you can find one under our Connect drop-down at circleofhope.net.